and I'm talking 46, 47, 48, there was no clubhouse at all, only a groundsman's hut and two other huts alongside it, which were boys and girls changing rooms. No hot and cold or any running water at all, other than in the groundsman's hut. And he used to provide us with buckets of cold water after the game so we could have a bit of a sluice down, but it was very primitive. But we'd often travel 20, 30 miles to an away match. And in the very early days, when petrol was rationed, it was quite a challenge to get, you know, to somewhere like Bedford, which we played regularly. Well, you had to rely on people either going on a train or sharing a car, depending if the driver had any petrol coupons.
Yes, of course.
Not to my knowledge, ever used a coach, even when we went away to festivals at the so-called seaside, like Worthing and Clacton, and I can't remember the other one. Always went in cars, in convoy, or...
Yes.
9 or 10 teams turning out every Saturday, with occasional mixed friendly games on Sundays. The clubhouse would be seething after the match. Playing on grass in those days, you'd get something like 70 or 80 people all pouring into the clubhouse at one moment.
Yes.
Our first home there was what used to be the Bowls Pavilion from behind the Cherry Tree pub in Welling Garden. And that was sort of dismantled. They were going to have something bigger and better. So they dismantled it, and we had it shipped down to King George V playing field and rebuilt, and we tacked a little bit extra on. And Whitbreads, who owned the Beehive, which is alongside, which actually was on their land, earlier donated the land to the cricket club because they had a fairly primitive sort of clubhouse, which they were quite pleased to get out of eventually and join us. So we merged as a sports club, limited company, and it was run by what they called a joint management committee. So we made a lot of money over the bar because we got our
thirsty work.
We got our supplies from Whitbread. Field players would just wear hockey boots, which in those days they were sort of screw-in type spikes. Which if you got one landed on your shin or your ankle, it was jolly painful. Do a fair amount of damage.
Yes.
Knee-length socks and shin pads, a very primitive shin guard such, and then shorts. And the club colours were royal blue and white. That was a royal blue shirt with white sleeves and a white collar. And the ladies wore the same, more or less. But in those days, the goalie just wore cricket pads.
Right, yes.
Wicketkeeper's pads and a pair of what they call kickers, which were leather shoes with a reinforced toe cap. Well, 35 minutes each way.
Okay.
On a 5-minute break for, in the early days, oranges or a slice of orange.
Yes.
Always provided tea and sandwiches or something after. And before we'd actually got the clubhouse big enough to accommodate that sort of thing, we used to go to the local cafes for our refreshments. There was Bridge Road Cafe on just opposite Norton. Traditionally, 2:30.
Okay.
Yeah. And they say there would be four pitches, and you know, all KG5 playing fields itself has got a large car park, so there was you can imagine there was, you know, 55 plus the umpires, of course, traipsing out for this. And they didn't all start at exactly the same time, but you know, traditionally it was 2:30, and then you'd be back in the clubhouse by 4-ish. And if you're lucky, you got away by about 6. There was a lot of imbibing going on, as you Indeed. Might say, after the games. We used to run a regular disco once a month. Mm. And we had a Christmas, we used to have a children's Christmas party, and we had a guy, we had a fireworks party. When we were at the grammar school, we used to, after, either at lunchtime or after the lessons were finished, the boys and the girls used to play a bit of knockabout with mixed hockey. Mm. I mean, it wasn't really encouraged by the school, but they sort of tolerated it. And that's how I got into the game. So eventually I joined the club in 1946, just after its reformation in late 1945. Mm. Oh, I think we had two men's teams in those days. Then we had a lot of players, funny enough. Not everybody got a game every week. Mm. Because I was one of the latecomers, I didn't get a game every week. But eventually I decided that I would like to be considered for more regular selection, and it did so happen. They then invented a third team, and I got into that. And as the years progressed, I moved up into seconds, and I did have a short spell in the first, but I really wasn't quite good enough for that. We had some excellent players who played county, and we had one who was an England under-23 player, who was the teacher at a school on the other side of Berkhamsted. And we used to have a selection meeting every Sunday morning at the home of the club captain, and that was always the first 11 captain. He was known as the club captain. Team selection. Every Sunday morning, the captains would gather round at somebody's, wherever was the first 11 captain's house, and chew over the cud of a post-mortem on the previous day's games, and who was good, who was bad, etc., etc., and who's due for promotion and demotion, etc. And that worked very well, actually, and I thought it was very democratic. The only problem was, you'd made your selections, then somebody had to pass this message down the line. And in the early days, I got that rotten job. I think I must have volunteered. I'm not quite sure how it happened, but that was Sunday afternoon and Sunday evening, and Monday I'd be rushing around Wellingarn City on my bicycle or my motorcycle delivery.
Yes.
We used to have a printed card that said, you have been selected to play for so-and-so, against so-and-so, meet at so-and-so, etc. And each of those personally delivered.
Goodness.
Because never in those early days, not everybody had a telephone. Obviously, if you did, then you were lucky. Yes. You could get a call. But personally, I was a halfback, really, but more inclined to be a forward. The brief period I had in the first 11, they stuck me on the left wing, which was typical. If you know, I don't know what to do with anybody, put him on the left wing. We were blessed in having senior players who were quite happy to coach. A lot of them, of course, had family members who were coming into hockey, so it was a two-edged sword, really. So
yes.
They can help their family, they can help the club at the same time. You know, if we're talking about in the 40s, I think the subscriptions was about 10 shillings or something like that. I thought in the very early days, I don't think we paid a match fee at all. Because you had to pay for transport, and sometimes you had to take a train to Cambridge or Hitchin. And I didn't mention that one of the highlights of the social calendar was what we call President's Day. That was always on a Sunday, usually early April, when hopefully the weather was a bit more encouraging. And the president used to bring his own invitation team. And our presidents in those days, they're not so much now. Those days they were sort of giants among boys, you know, as you might say, and they had contacts everywhere, sort of thing. And they would invite a pretty top-class team, and they would play our men's first team, and the ladies similarly would do the same thing. Those games, I did get invited to play in one of the club teams. And that was a memorable occasion because we had there was a supporting game that followed it, which was sort of called Mum's and Dad's Team. And this is where Lavinia comes into it, because her husband Tony was a hockey player, she was obviously, and they had three boys. And the eldest of the three, Richard, I think it was. Anyway, they were in playing in the Mums and Dads teams, which was quite... There was a generation, there was a sort of husband, wife and children. Quite impressive. And similarly, other mums and dads had children. So those games were not memorable as far as I'm concerned, but they were all part of the fabric of the club.
Yes.
I mean, I did get invited to play for a County B team once. They turned up to play... They used our pitch. Our first 11 pitch at King George V was a really super grass pitch, really good. And we would invite or make it available for the county if they needed it. Well, they didn't. Then the county first team probably wouldn't and didn't, as far as I know. But the county seconds, who were called the B team, they played. And they used it on a quite irregular basis. They would play other counties there. And I went down to watch one game, and I turned up about 10 minutes before the start. And the captain of the Hearts B team looked at the spectators, and suddenly he zeroed on me. He said, "Have you got your kit, lad?" So I said, "Yes," because I'd actually was hoping to play another game later on. And he said, "Well, get changed, you're on." And I said, "What? You're joking." He said, "Well, he hasn't turned up. We just had a phone call to say he's stranded in somewhere or other and he won't be here." So he said, "Would you play?"
Goodness.
About 61 or 62.
Okay.
We played six-a-side hockey, and we had two very powerful six-a-side teams. And it was a regular event that there would be six-a-side tournaments throughout the county. We used to regularly win that, and that was, that was quite something, because there were teams from a lot of the home counties playing there. And eventually, we thought we were so good, we'd enter what was called the London Sixes, and that was the top flight and six-a-side teams in the country. And they used to... We had a run at success, and we finished up as the losing finalists on two occasions. Mm. And people looked round and said, "Who are you? Where do you come from?" Our results were published in the national press. Mm. And, people said, "Ooh, Welling Garden." We're talking late 60s. Okay. Yeah, late 60s.
Yes.
When we were running, as I said before, four ladies and five men's teams, nine teams every Saturday without fail, and also supporting a mixed Sunday team as well.